You know, listeners, I constantly bring up how my podcasting is kind of like chaos magic. So I decided to end this year with a roundtable discussion because, you know, it conveys the cyclical, circular nature of the calendar. And for today's roundtable, we are talking about the Hopkinsville Goblins, but not in the normal extraterrestrial manner that you're all used to. Oh no. Today we will be dancing in a fairy ring. And joining me in this dance, Christina, known as the Crescent Hair, Chris Galliano, and Todd Purse, because
he's the king of goblins.
Nevertheless, all four of us are holding hands and dancing ring around the rosy, discussing goblins from the perspective of artistry, how they have seeped into the pop culture and forever changed not just how we perceive aliens and the UFO phenomenon, but also goblins, high strangeness, owls.
Though Christina during the episode says that birds aren't real.
Time travel, nature elementals, fairies, and even psychedelic trips induced by bioluminescent mushrooms. We're just a group of four individuals who are sick and tired of listening to the same old boring story of the Kentucky goblins, alien invaders. So we all brought to the table our own ideas on what these things actually are, but most importantly, how they inspire us to cash in on their pop cultural presence. Okay, guys, today, another roundtable, just like the Jackalope episode, but now we have four people in this fairy circle. So with me today are Chris Galliano. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
We have Christina, known as the Crescent Hair.
Hello.
And Todd Purse.
Hey, how's it going, Vuk?
Hey, man. we don't record every other day.
I know. We've got a string of them going here, man.
Oh, man. So I actually, at the time of this recording, I appeared on your show today.
Yes.
Chris here is going to appear on my show on Monday. So he's doing another recording with me now before even making his debut on my show.
Good stuff.
That sounds about right.
Oh, yeah. He ropes you in. Peels you like an onion. Brings you out.
And Christina, you have not been on my show for a few months now.
Because I've been in like Zombielandia on third shift, the graveyard shift.
Yeah.
But we're going to change that.
I think this whole episode will be like a chaotic carousel, just as the artwork that we're using that you made is conveying these four goblins dancing around in a fairy circle.
Yeah, we're the goblins.
I myself am overworked and stressed out. Chris is a bit boozy and shy. Christina, you're half dead.
Yeah, I'm recovering. Yep. And
Todd, you are high on cough medicine.
Yeah, I'm pretty delusional at this point. We've had a sick household for the last week, and I mean, besides just the large amount of medicine, I also haven't slept for a while just with sick kids and stuff. So, you know, I'm perfect place to talk about some goblins.
Oh yeah, especially because you're the expert on goblins. You know everything about the Kentucky goblins, especially how to monetize them.
I wouldn't go that far. I draw them plenty. But as far as my knowledge, you know, I think that I wouldn't go as far as an expert.
Okay, so right off the bat, does anybody on this panel think that these things were aliens?
No, not really.
I mean,
so Chris, I'm going to start off with you because you're the newcomer of this group. And in the debut episode, you're going to be on my show. We actually talked about the Kentucky Goblins as your kind of most favorite entities of high strangeness. So can you share with us why the Kentucky Goblins are actually your favorite?
Yeah, I think it's just because it was one of the first stories of high strangeness that I ever encountered. It's just so weird and fascinating how this like horde of these weird goblin creatures just attack this random family out in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, just the way that they were described and the way they looked, it just appealed to me. It seemed so just odd and different. So I guess I'm just attracted to that differentness.
Mm-hmm. I have noticed recording one episode with you where we talked about all this stuff that you are very focused on the look of the creature. And I did point out to you that there are three different versions of the goblins because there are
three witness sketches that are kind of different. So how are you incorporating that into your art project now?
Well, when I do it, I kind of want to have each of the eyewitness sketches as their own separate being, all lined up in sort of a jail or prison-like lineup, kind of showing each version of what the different eyewitnesses saw. Because it ranges from like really, I guess, goblin-looking as far as what we would consider fae-like goblins to something that's a little bit more vague and alien-like, I guess you could say.
I actually looked at the witness sketches today and I noticed that only one of them has antenna for some reason. I remembered one with goggles and I found that one, but it seems that one was some sketch that was circulated on radio and TV stations but never actually verified with the witnesses.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, I found that one too. It was like they used it for newspapers and they based it off of one of the eyewitnesses. I can't remember which one it was, but that's how that one got started.
Yeah, it's very interesting how different people, like even the ones who witnessed the goblins, have different perceptions of what they look like. And then when that diverges into, you know, media and other people, everybody has their own version. That's the point of this discussion we're having today. Everybody knows the story of the goblins. If the listener doesn't know, go listen to any other podcast. Come on. I'm not going to be reciting all over again the same thing. It's actually how we individually perceive these things and what they mean to us. Chris, I also wanted to ask you, like you brought up in the episode that we did together, that you see these goblins as kind of trickster figures.
Yeah. I'd say like as far as the goblin itself, I can see it as just this like mischievous energy that they're not really there to do a serious amount of harm. Like they did cause some damage to the property and whatnot. And obviously they scared just the crap out of the eyewitnesses. But I'd mostly say that, yeah, it was just like a weird little mischievous tricksterish energy that influenced the people that were experiencing it. And they saw it as however their brain interpreted it. That's why you have all these different eyewitness sketches, or at least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. What color are you going to color them?
Well, I guess I've drawn them before, but I did it based off of when I only knew of the one, the more like simplified version with the ovalish head. I did that one gray with yellow eyes. So I was kind of thinking of sticking to that color scheme, but I had the QFOS report, so I might reread that and like see if there's any little details that I might have missed and see if I can incorporate it into the color scheme or the drawing itself.
So we all know here that the Hopkinsville Goblins case spawned the pop cultural definition of little green men, even though they were not reported as green at all. Now, you, Chris, are going to be doing them in a silver color, which is more accurate to the witness descriptions. But we have two outliers here, Christina and Todd, who keep doing them in green.
Yes.
Christina, can you maybe tell us what inspired you to draw them the way they are portrayed in the episode artwork?
So, as you know, like when I take one of these creatures, I try to look at like what the eyewitness, what they saw, how they drew them, etc. And then I think about my side, which is, you know, the natural side. Like, okay, so if this creature existed in nature, what would it look like? Now, I know that the witnesses said they were gray, silver, that they weren't green. But for me, the way I drew it, I was like, I wanted them to be matching to their surroundings. Like, I wanted them to be like, if you were in your backyard, you may not even see these little critters. So that's why mine are more of like a green color. And also the whole little green men thing has always stuck in the back of my mind. I did originally make them like more of like a grayish, but then I changed my mind. Like, I drew one and was like, no, I need to make it green.
I think you have a point there, because as we started this episode, like, nobody here believes these are aliens. And the silver color kind of conveys the idea that these things are from outer space, sci-fi feel, you know?
Yeah.
But the green brings them back to nature. So if you're doing like a fairy version of them, it makes more sense that they're green.
Exactly. And, you know, I was like, yeah, they said they were silver. But to me, I was just like, no, they got to be more natural. And then, you know, I get up all in my, you know, nature elemental bullshit. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make them green and they're going to look like Kentucky goblins. goblins with the weird ears and the eyes, but then I'm going to put beetle wings on them, you know?
Yeah. But why did you put the antenna? Is that a nod to one of the witness sketches that have antenna, or is it just, oh, I want to do fairies, so it's going to have bug-like antenna?
So I started putting antennas on all of them, except for the couple of them I didn't. They have antennas because a lot of times in like fairy lore and stuff like that, like pop culture and things, fairies have antennas because they're magical. And, you know, sometimes they're drawn like kind of bug-like. So I kind of put antennas on these guys and a lot of the other guys that I drew because I'm trying to recall that, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Also, I want to point out, tomorrow I am interviewing Morgan Daimler, who wrote like 50 books on fairy lore.
Nice.
That's so awesome.
Wow. Yeah. So I'm thinking, should I ask her if fairies have antenna, or will she be mad at me for that?
You know what? I think if she's written 50 books or something, like, I think she's going to, I don't think she'll be offended. Like, because it's pop culture. Like, it's up in there.
Yes. I think her new book will actually be like fairies in the 21st century, like the more pop culture version and the history of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know how I am. Like, I try to tie things in, like, each piece and like a project, I try to tie them in. And like, say the Jersey Devil, I didn't give antennas to because it already had horns. So I tried to go through and kind of put antennas on most of them to try to tie them in. And also, I'm sorry, but Kentucky goblins with an antenna, they're just cute. What can I say? And you know, it's scary. I try to draw scary things and it never happens. So
you just can't do that.
I can't do it. Can't do it. They're my buddies.
So Chris here said he thinks they are high strangeness, tricksterish figures. You think they are nature elementals and fairies?
Yeah, I think a lot of, and you know, from a previous conversation, if any of these so-called cryptids or high strangeness beings existed, to me, if I had to categorize them, to me, they're natural, like they're nature elementals. They're like spirits, you know, they're out there doing things. And like I've said to you before, each one has a job. Like they all have things, they're caretakers. And for me, that makes me really happy because especially in this time of day and age where we're all like fighting with the natural world, when I draw these guys, like I like to think about that whole thing, like them as nature elementals out there doing good things and not, you know.
Okay, but is there a good thing in fucking with a whole family of people?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think that they were fucking with them. I think, and you know how I am with my cryptids and my critters, I think they were communicating with them. They were trying to connect the people. And the people were like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. I know that we had, I gave you this idea to do the artwork. The Mothman, the Braxy, and the Kentucky Goblin, but just as costumes of barn owls doing trick-or-treating. Yep. And we did talk once about the Kentucky Goblins actually being owls dressed as goblins who are out trick-or-treating.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. That was one. Yeah. Because remember, we talked about Flatwoods and Mothman and the goblins being owls for real.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think if I wanted to look at it, I think, and even like with the emergence of like the documentary, the Hellier documentary, I don't think at any point in time, if these things actually exist out there, I don't think they're malicious. I think they're trying to communicate or they're trying to exist in a world alongside us. And we just maybe don't understand because. Something like the concept of a goblin looking like this is really scary to us. And it was probably even more scary back then to people that didn't have access to something like TV or internet or something like that. Like they lived in a farmhouse and it was like, what, the 50s. So, you know, they would have interpreted it different.
Okay. This ties into what Chris told me when we were recording our episode, like the goblins didn't do anything to these people. It was the people who are doing most of the stuff shooting about. Chris, like, you see them as tricksters, but what do you think is maybe the function of their trickery?
Yeah, I have no clue. It could literally just be because they're out in the middle of nowhere. So this energy has, I don't know if it's maybe more concentrated in like, I don't want to say it's not abandoned, but very like secluded areas. Because usually most high strangeness sightings or anything that has anything weird among this kind of stuff usually happens to people on a very personal basis. Mm-hmm. So like having these people being so secluded, that energy might have been more easily tapped into through them. I mean, they already had didn't they have like a UFO sighting or something in the sky before all of this happened?
Yes. So I think only one of them saw a UFO.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe even just that little bit maybe influenced the rest of the group and it stirred up that tricksterish energy. Or I mean, I wouldn't even go against saying that it's some something fae-like. Like, I have honestly no definite stake in this, but I just feel like it felt very tricksterish, very like just mischievous in general, very curious.
Even that initial UFO sighting, the UFO was trailed with like a rainbow exhaust, right? Like, it wasn't just a UFO. Like, it started weird from the get-go. I think my favorite part about all this stuff is how it like mashes this kind of like sci-fi thing with this high fantasy thing. And like, this was like mid-50s, right? 50-something? Yeah.
55.
Yes. So like, culturally, it's going through this giant shift of like pulp comics and pulp like fiction and like all of this stuff. Science fiction stuff was huge right now, but like, those things don't have like UFOs with rainbow exhausts or like little green men doing backflips or stuff like that. Like, the extra kind of fantastic elements of this case is what makes it super like kind of super interesting or inspiring or whatever you want, why it sticks around, I think.
I want to point out that in 52 we had the Flatwoods Monster Baxi, which was again a group sighting of a supposed alien metallic entity, whatever. But both of these cases, the Hopkinsville Goblins and the Flatwoods Monster, from the skeptical perspective, are associated with owl sightings and sightings of meteors. So it's like meteors and owls have this kind of connection that they appear at the same place at the same time.
Yeah. That's super interesting.
Maybe owls are really aliens. We're just all being tricked.
Okay, Todd, I'm gonna go to you then. So, apart from being money makers, what do the goblins mean to you?
Oh, man. Well, full disclosure, I don't make that much off the goblins. I mean, I I use them a lot in things that I do make some money off of, but I wish I could say I support myself full time by drawing goblins. That would be awesome. I get paid way more for drawing cute cats and animals for coffee bags and stuff than anything. But you know, I mean, it's funny because I think it was in the conversation with AP, I was talking about where I kind of attached to the goblin, and it was actually a gremlin story from Twilight Zone episode, I actually saw it as the Treehouse of Horrors episode first.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah. Terror at whatever feet. I'm horrible at titles, so I'm going to say right now, I don't know.
We knew what you were talking about.
Totally. That little dude, and I'm talking specifically about the Treehouse of Horror Simpsons version, that little gremlin dude freaked me out so much when I was little. That, like, when I first started drawing monsters, like as a little kid, that's what I was drawing. So when I got back into drawing monsters, goblins were very similar to that. And I just kind of like the idea of reclaiming this thing that really freaked me out as a kid, even though I know it wasn't exactly a goblin.
Do you know that the movie Gremlins, as well as the movie Critters, were inspired by the Kentucky Goblins?
Yeah.
Only recently. Like, I definitely found that out in the last couple of years, and I love that because both of those movies were huge for me. Like, and those were both in those, like, especially Gremlins. Like, I didn't even consider that like paranormal growing up. That was just like a comedy for me. Like, it's weird how certain, like, I was talking about this with Ghostbusters. Like, I watched Ghostbusters every Saturday my whole youth, but would have never told you that I watched like paranormal cartoons. That was just Ghostbusters. And so
it was normal.
It was normal. Yeah, totally. It's weird how that stuff sinks in. Before we started doing this, or when you reached out about doing this roundtable tonight, I looked back to see when I actually started drawing the goblin that I draw now, that, like, I'm kind of known for or whatever. And that was all from the Kryptonaut Zimbabwe Goblins episodes, actually. Like, that was the first time I really, which is a whole nother, you know, episode of everything, I'd imagine. I can't even remember. Is it the Tekeloshi?
Yeah, it's the Tekeloshi. Yeah. Only the thing is, you're not portraying it with a very large penis.
Yeah.
No, it's, I remember there was lots of, darker things in all of those, or not, there was a lot of things that I feel like that was the time where I was like, oh, goblins are really weird, and a lot more than just, you know, that one account at Kelly's Hopkinsville. And I was like, I'm going to start messing with these guys as an image, and didn't even really, to be honest, like, associate it with the Hopkinsville goblins until I was like, oh yeah, that works too.
I find that very interesting because you have American goblins, but yet you're introduced to this concept via African ones. Okay, so to me, that sounds like, sure, I can make a sandwich myself, but it's much more delicious and exotic if somebody else makes it for me. So it's like, you already have your piece of mythology related to this kind of creature, but it's always exotic and more interesting and mysterious when it's from another, you know, country.
Totally. And to be honest with you, like, I probably drew it the way I drew it because it felt more comfortable that, like, I think that the I took less of inspiration from the actual tales that the Kryptonaut guys were telling and more just like, oh yeah, goblins are a thing, because I was so bored kind of from hearing that same like 20 minute story of the Hopkinsville case. Like it was, I hadn't thought about goblins because I was kind of overhearing that same thing that we were just talking about. And then like hearing that, I was like, oh, this is a whole nother way to think about goblins or a whole nother mythology around them. And then I got, yeah, I went back and re-listened to a bunch of stuff about the Hopkinsville case and was like, oh yeah, this is great. Like I think it just kind of re-sparked my love for goblins in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that they're just like high fantasy creatures. Like they're not, they don't just exist in the realm of the supernatural, like some of the monsters or cryptids or whatever you want to say. Like they existed before that in all kinds of fantasy stuff.
Okay. So the reason I am kind of picking at you for, you know, cashing in on the goblins uh-huh. is because of the theory that this was hoaxed by the family, you know?
Totally.
Like they hoaxed the goblin story so they can cash in on it. But the irony is they are not the ones cashing in on this story, but everybody else, especially you.
Okay, totally. So I, you know, when you just asked Chris, like what he thought maybe the point of the trickster was or things like that, I'm not going to claim to know, but I have some fun thoughts maybe. Let's go with the naming, like the little green men. Like mm-hmm. I've talked to you guys about this before as far as like essentially like the social consciousness or the pop culture consciousness, whatever you want to call it, making these decisions and saying, okay, we need to get this idea out into the society, into the, you know, group consciousness, and we're going to use this experience as a vehicle of doing it. And even though they weren't green or, you know, goblins or anything, that's mm-hmm. not the point, and that doesn't matter. The point is what sticks around, and there's something behind the scenes kind of controlling what sticks around. And
okay, but do you, any of you know why they were called green goblins by the media?
Was it a derogatory thing?
No, it was a very stupid, dumb pun because this happened in the town of Kelly, and Kelly Green is a thing.
Kelly Green, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, that's even better. That makes me think that like those little things like that line up, it's like, oh yeah, so that's exactly what's going on. Like that was supposed to happen in that place for these images and kind of titles or labels to live on. But it's interesting to me that this specific instance that, you know, has been documented in a bajillion different ways and drawn in a whole bunch of different ways. And like, you know, like you said, Vuk cashed in on in a whole bunch of different ways. It really like, it also just kind of changed the way that people perceived, like, I feel like it gave goblins a new life. Like it's one of those things that in this realm, like where people talk, like in the UFO world and stuff like that, where people reporting goblin sightings and stuff at this point, or like mm-hmm. it was a lot more of like weird humanoids and stuff at this point. But like goblins seem like a very specific, almost like bringing something back from a past mythology.
Yeah.
I also find it very interesting how this blunder of the media kind of incorporated the idea that aliens are green, and then that stuck with the pop culture of the time after the Kelly Hopkinsville encounters.
Yep, until the grays came along. Ah. Those damn grays.
And then they reclaimed back the silver color.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think, like, I always think about the goblins because they're the second, like, my first exposure to cryptids, you know, quote unquote, like weirdness like that was Flatwoods. And then the next thing for me was the Kentucky goblins. Like, those are my two early exposure as a weird child to high strangeness stuff.
Okay. I want to ask Chris this. So, Chris, you recently portrayed, and we based our episode about this, the Manhattan Brooklyn Bridge abduction. And I think this may have been your first time you drew multiple entities at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel about the goblins being always like a multiple entity, because most of the humanoids that you draw are just a single entity, but the goblins always come in numbers. It's like a whole gang.
I mean, it's not really, it doesn't feel any different. I wanted to go back for a second on, because something Todd mm-hmm. said about him like relating to the goblin more based off of that, the Treehouse of Horrors. I just like pieced together why I connect more with the rounder headed version of the goblin. And it's because I always considered them more alien-ish, like when I first got into all of this. And the number one alien that I grew up knowing was the grays. So having that more simplified like facial structure was so like reminiscent of, I mean, not exactly the same, because obviously the eyes, the head shape are a little different, and the ears and all that, but that gray tone and like very simplified features, those two just mesh so well together. I don't know how I never like realize that, but it was really kind of crazy for me to just piece that together right now.
That's awesome.
That illustration's fantastic, by the way. I was looking at it and I was like, is that? Oh, that's cool. I knew what it was. I was like, I bet that's the bridge incident.
Yeah, the bridge incident. And then I broke Chris's heart by telling him that that's all a fake.
Yeah, Vuk's good at that.
You know, the pisser honor of dreams. Leave it to him.
That's so funny. Yeah, you know, Chris, when you were saying that, I totally agree. And there is something that's like the way I draw the goblin is as simple as possible. And it definitely is kind of based around that like gray alien head for sure. The big ears are like so important. Earlier, I just said that, and this is probably the cough medicine brain, but I just said that, you know, goblins probably weren't a thing. But I'm pretty sure Rob Christofferson has done a whole episode just called Big Eared Aliens. And it's all about like aliens from this time period that just have big ears and like look kind of goblin. So maybe it is just a thing.
You know what? Could be. Or, you know, like going back to me and Vuk and our strange conversations, maybe they're just giant owls, like great horned owls with the little tufts.
Uh-huh.
Here I am pissing that on parades too.
I mean, I have not yet disclosed what I think these things are, but I mean, isn't it obvious? They're fucking owls.
Everything's owls.
I mean, you guys are on tracing owls. I'm the guy who talks about owls. You're the guys who talk about tracing as an artwork and crafts.
Oh, wait, Todd, it's owls, right? Owls?
Yes. Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please. That's very well accepted. And that was one of my favorites I've done in a while.
You have to keep the owls. You have to keep that one, because that one's hilarious. Because I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And then you were like, I misspelled it. And I was like, oh, but I didn't even notice. But now it's amazing.
No, those are the ones that get me, that just go by your eye. And like, I type everything on Procreate and it'll suggest things as you're going. Be like, hey, dummy, you're spelling this wrong. But it doesn't have like a red underline. So it's not like, hey, this is spelled wrong. So if it's close enough and my eye doesn't catch it, which that obviously it did not, I was probably a little too high, a little too early in the morning. And that's how that goes. So, but yeah, those are the ones that always get me, where it's just like one little letter off somewhere. I'm like, oops, so well.
it was amazing though. Like when I did go back, I was like, this is, just keep it.
Also, I think there's some kind of synchronicity between Todd's dyslexia and your art, Christina, because he fucked up trying to recreate the art of the logo for my show you did. But then a few months back when he was doing your character, Francine the Braxy, he also fucked up some word there I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. In the comic. I can't remember which one that was, but it was very similar.
Yeah. But it's, you know what? It's funny. It's just funny because we can laugh about it and we can laugh at ourselves. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. I'm very open that I'm very bad at editing or anything along those lines. So, you know, people understand. They read words fine. I'm not good at writing them.
Yeah, we get it. We're human beings.
So, Todd, I hope one day you will do a 4-person round table without any editing so we can see how that turns out.
I'm down.
I wanted to go back to Chris, to what I asked you. So you already portrayed the grays. I see the grays also as entities that come in multiples. Like, you never, when you're thinking of grays, even saying grays, it's in multiples. And the Kentucky Goblins is in multiples. And they are short humanoids that are gray in color. So there is some kind of similarity there. How do you think doing the grays already is going to influence your art that you're still in the process of creating of the Kentucky Goblins?
I don't think it's going to necessarily change it. It did help kind of doing 3 of the same figures in different positions. It kind of like made me think more it's a 2D drawing, but it's, you kind of have to figure out the rotations and the different like perspectives of that same exact figure. But it is weird, you talking about the whole threes thing. I feel like it's very obviously a big thing in the whole paranormal field. Like talking about the threes, it made me think of Monsters Among Among Us, how he talks about
the Men in Black. What is it?
And the mirrored men, that they always appear in threes. It's just so, it's a very weird coincidence. I mean, I don't want, it's not a, I hate getting like biblical and stuff like that, because I'm not religious at all. But even in like all the religious stuff, like the number three is very iconic, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but that number three
the
is
the Trinity.
Just
it does not need to be the Holy Trinity.
Yeah.
And the Trinity was just a play on some sort of Celtic or an idea well before the Trinity that the Christianity made popular existed. I can't remember what it is, but it was definitely based on something else.
Okay, Christina, do you know the significance of Trinity in magic and paganism, because you are more in tune with that?
It represents the maiden, the mother, and the crone. So basically, life cycles of a goddess, basically. Or a woman, or Mother Earth.
But see, that's the more feminine version of the riddle of the Sphinx, which is more related to men. Yeah.
But that's all that's the only thing I know about with the Trinity thing. That's the only thing I'm aware of with that. Like, that's commonly used, that it's like the three cycles.
The three stages of life, like a metamorphosis of humans.
Yeah, like, you know, you got your maiden, you got your mother, and you got the crone kind of thing. And there's different things that pertain to each one and whatnot. Archetype. Yeah. That's the word. So, but that's the only thing I'm aware of with that. Like, I probably know something else, but I can't pull it out of my brain at this particular point.
But you see, the riddle of the Sphinx ends with a three, because like what starts its life like walking on fours and then on twos and then on threes.
Yeah.
Because the third is the old man with a stick.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things. Like, I don't know where the whole mother, maiden, crone, like, I don't know if that's more like modern or if that's like, you know, more of ancient, you know, I don't know the exact like time frame of it. So, you know, maybe it was before that, or maybe that was before that.
Okay. But I mean, if you're talking about archetypes, then it is something in the collective unconsciousness. So we can even speculate that it popped up independently in various different cultures.
Yeah, probably, like a lot of other things do.
Huh. Absolutely.
Like pyramids and spirals.
Todd, why do you do the goblins green?
Dude, that's a good... I mean, so like that shade of lime green has been my favorite color since I was like, I can remember. But it definitely is a nod to the Hopkinsville and the Little Green Men. And just goblins seem like they should be green, right? Like, I mean, even with or without that story or the knowledge of the Hopkinsville, like just thinking about goblins from like, you know, old folklore stuff, it seems like they should be hanging out under bridges and like in caves and be like green with wizard cloaks or loincloths. I don't know. That's what I picture.
Like leaves, green.
Yeah.
But that's the more modern fantasy interpretation of them based on video games, especially World of Warcraft.
See, I think of it more of along the lines of Tolkien and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's like where the video game depictions come from. Or the Dungeons and Dragons manuals and stuff like that. Yeah, totally. Like
Tolkien, I think he invented orcs, but orcs are not green in Tolkien's, you know, writings.
No, and goblins are from like the 14th century or some shit. They're from forever ago, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. So I know they've been around for a long time, but for some reason they just seem like they should be dirty and gross to me. and green kind of says
be
that.
Be like, dude, you smell like toes.
Yeah, smell like toad is a great way to put it. But I also like, you know, so when I first started doing the goblins, I did them as this little comic series just called Goblin Life, and I mean, I just had him hanging out in a cave and doing everyday things and having kind of like, you know, philosophizing to himself and things like that. But like, yeah, I like using him as a representation of like these gross, weird creatures just do everyday things like everyone else, like putting some mundane into it.
Okay, but I think the goblin to you symbolizes, how would I say, like, it incorporates all the high strangeness into it. It can be a sci-fi alien thing, but it can also be a fantasy thing. It can also be a cryptid. So it can be all of these things at once.
And, like, there's, yes, no, absolutely. That's what I like about him the most. And, like, as far as, like, why I think I use the goblin as, like, the most prevalent image in all my artwork is because it walks those lines. And it's funny because it's kind of like the owl, Vuk. Like, the goblin is, like, the fantasy owl. Like, the owl, although is, like, a real thing and can be found and all this stuff. It's also weird as fuck and like just kind of one of those things that represents, and maybe it's just because Twin Peaks is forever in my brain, but it just represents the other to me forever. Like even, and I guess I probably was into Twin Peaks before really getting into, I probably knew Mothman was thought to be an owl or something like that, but it really was before I knew it was such a big trope in the paranormal world. So maybe I'm just primed for that, but yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, so the reason people always associate the Kentucky Goblins with alien phenomena, I mean, obviously because it was in 55, but also because one of the people, I can't remember who, the guy who was out at the water.
Getting water.
Yes, right? getting water. He saw the UFO with a rainbow exhaust. But what I wanted to say, so before doing this episode now, I was interviewing Fred Anderson from Sweden, and he was telling me about gnome encounters in Sweden, which are associated with UFOs and aliens. But people there don't see flying saucers associated with gnomes, but rather UFOs, which are balls of light through which gnomes enter or exit our world. So more like portals or something.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
So it begs the question, like, if people are seeing these goblin creatures with UFOs, are they really aliens, or are these UFOs just a vessel for another place or another dimension or something? I don't know.
Fairy portals.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I definitely think that whole... Okay, so there's a bunch of weird stuff with like Hopkinsville and that whole area in general, besides the Kelly Green Men and everything, right? Like, besides the Mammoth Cave is close, and that's what the biggest one in the world, or the longest continuous cave system, or some crap like that, right?
Yes.
I can't remember now.
But wasn't
there some other weirdo that's from Hopkinsville? Who else was from Hopkinsville? God damn it, it's gonna break my brain now.
I did not watch Hellier, so I don't know.
It's not Hellier. I want to say it's like a magician, or man, I'm gonna sound like such a silly person because I'm gonna find out from Googling it real quick and be like, oh yeah, I should have had this prepared before starting the sentence.
No worries, man.
Oh gosh, it's really going to bug me though.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you this question because you and I, Todd, are playing with these ideas a lot. So
yes.
Do you think there was nothing really much happening in Hopkinsville back in before 55, but when this happened, it kind of re-mystified the land?
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. Like, I think this would definitely serve to, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, did what happened around this area after this event? Like, how did things change? And like, I know that the farm and stuff was overrun and they had to leave their homestead and all that, right? But like, what happened to that place? Like, what continues to go on there? You know what I mean? Like, that's, I definitely think that this type of event has that possibility. And with the stuff we've talked about before, there's always like these other instances of high strangeness that seem to go on right around the same area. Like, is there similar things with this that you know of?
I am not sure, man, because I decided to do this roundtable without any research or planning.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm Googling it. Edgar Casey is from
Edgar Casey. Thank you. God damn it. How did I forget that? Yeah, Edgar Casey. So yeah, that's his hometown, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew it was somebody that we would all think is somewhat relevant to this.
Yeah, because I was like, I had it stuck in my brain too. I'm like, there's somebody weird from that town.
Yeah, and that always, I really do think that, you know, certain areas have these like weird, you know, people are from them and then certain things happen. It's all for a reason. And you know, I don't think there's any one thing that makes it happen. It's probably a like, you know, amalgamation of a bunch of factors and stuff.
What if the point is for the land to be remystified so it may spawn Edgar Casey, a weirdo, so it can send him off into the world?
Yes, I think that's beautiful. And definitely, I mean, I like the idea that these things are kind of either inspired by or are used to inspire like novel events and stuff like that. And what better way than putting out one of the weirdest, you know, weirdest people to go in the world?
The whole thing too. Yeah, like these little pockets that spawn all these like weird people, high strangeness. You brought up the Mammoth Cave system. If you overlay that with a map, you know, put that over a map, you can go online and get the whole system mapped out and you overlay it with like the map of the states, you're going to see a lot of these weird things happened around different branches of the cave system.
I love that. I definitely, I mean, even on a metaphorical level, I think our buddy AP Strange said a similar thing about like sea monsters and why, what the attraction is to sea monsters, that they're these like deep, dark thoughts coming up from the abyss. But like the idea that all of these phenomenon are coming from like the earth and below, just, it makes so much sense. I think I talk about this show a million times every time I record an episode, but my kid's really into the show called Mystery Doug, and there's a new one today. The question that the kids asked was, can trees talk to each other? And they go into the whole thing that I know Vooks talked about, mm-hmm. where the mycelia from mm-hmm. the mushrooms, the trees are using the mycelia to communicate to each other. And the I think it was a Canadian scientist, she like introduced a nutrient in one tree and then went down like 2 miles, and trees down that far were showing signs of this nutrient. And she was like, how the fuck is this happening? And then figured out it was, you know, the mycelia and stuff. So yeah, shit underground is definitely magic and can do some weird stuff.
Okay, yeah. I'm glad that you brought this up. This is something I wanted to ask Christina. So when they investigated this area after the mm-hmm. Sutton family had this panic, whatnot, and they brought the military to investigate, they found foxfire around the area. Foxfire is a type of mushroom or fungus that produces bioluminescence.
Yep.
And I know you incorporated mushrooms into your artwork. Is this intentional? Or was it more like fairy ring stuff?
Yes. So the whole idea was to do a fairy ring, you know, which fairy rings are considered, you know, the mushrooms growing in a circle, which we all know is totally natural. And I'm not being sarcastic. But after I dug and I thought about things, then, you know, I knew about the foxfire. And that's why I also added that, because, you know, obvious reasons, could be hallucinations. And hallucinations are caused sometimes by mushrooms, as we know.
Okay. But I wanted to introduce this that you guys probably never heard of. It's just an idea I got now, because I talk with some people who investigate light phenomena and think that the source of the other and all this weird shit is lights, light orbs and stuff like that. We know that mushrooms can cause hallucinations if ingested, but what if something like a foxfire can cause hallucinations through the light that it emits?
Yeah,
I love energy.
That.
We got trippy energy throwing mushrooms out there, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that's beautiful, and why not? I mean, that would explain a lot, Vuk.
What if you go out there and these mushrooms are like giving off an aura and you inhale too much of it?
That reminds me of an episode of The X-Files where they actually inhale spores of a mushroom, yep. and the whole episode is a hallucination.
Yep, that's why
that's
I said
right.
that.
That's awesome.
Yep, good old X-Files.
I think that they're like bioluminescence in general is one of those things that is just so naturally magical. And like, so were they trying to use the foxfire as like a debunker, as like, yes. you guys just saw these glowing? Yeah, that's wild and wonderful. That's just crazy.
And I think it does not need to be just one thing. Like, there can be barn owls actually attacking these people in their house, but then there can be mushrooms emitting bioluminescence that kind of alters our perception, and now instead of owls we are seeing monstrous over exaggerations of them.
And then, like, you know, it's like another version of swamp gas.
And who knows how those mushrooms and those owls are linked? Like, is the bioluminescence also controlling the owls? Like you could really go down a rabbit hole with that.
Please don't do it, because then I'll have to like make
I think mushrooms are controlling everything.
You know what? Well, mushrooms, like, isn't it where they haven't categorized, like, they don't know something about them? Like,
we don't know much about them at all.
Yeah, like, they're just like the world's biggest mystery, and they're just mushrooms.
Vuk, Christina, that reminds me of something that I think is completely wrong that I've heard, but there was like a scientist or somebody in which said that they are like from another planet, and a bunch of people wrote articles saying that the mushrooms could be from other planets. Is there any basis in that, Vuk? Are they definitely completely terrestrial?
I mean, per science, they are completely terrestrial, but I am aware of those theories.
Is that like is that all crackpot theories, or are they, is there any valid things to
okay,
those theories?
Okay, so every living thing on this planet shares the same way that DNA is replicated and expressed through mm-hmm. the same enzymes. DNA is structured the exact same way molecularly. So fungi originate from the same source that is the source of all life on Earth. So they are very earthly.
They're very of this planet.
The same people that said mushrooms are from outer space, so the same people that said dolphins are aliens.
Yeah. That was Aldous Huxley, right? Like, I think we have him to blame for that one.
Okay. So Chris, how do you feel about the idea of doing the goblins as humanoid mushrooms, as like crypto-terrestrials?
Oh man, that's pretty trippy. I don't know about that. I mean, that definitely would diverge from the the eyewitness sketches, so it would be a little bit different for me, but I mean, it'd be something I'm willing to try out, see how it comes out.
I actually like your idea of having them as a lineup, a police lineup, because we did point out in the episode that there are three different depictions of them, yet this family apparently saw the same thing, yet three different people saw the three different things, kind of similar, but you know, one of them saw antenna, one of them saw suction cup feet, and so on. What do you think is valid here? Like, is every version valid? Like, what the people say they saw that they actually saw? Were they looking at one thing but seeing different things in their mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to that whole theme of, I mean, the paranormal and all of that is such a personal thing. I mean, I think about all the times that I've heard Todd talk about how our eyes are basically breaking down, things that we see get flipped all around and then get processed in our brains. So I'd assume, like, I mean, even like with the mushroom idea, it would make sense that each person would interpret it as their own thing, because I mean, their brains are the things that are interpreting whatever is going on. They could all be feeding off of each other at the same time, because if they're all saying that they're seeing a goblin, their brains are going to come up with whatever they perceive as a goblin. They could have been feeding off of each other. Their brains could have just been interpreting it as however they saw it. I mean, that's basically what happened.
Yeah, outside influences too. Yeah. Like, what if they went to a drive-in movie and saw like a science fiction movie and the creatures had suction cup fingers, and then like, you know, 6 months down the road they have this experience, their brains unwittingly recall this memory and kind of smush it together with their current experience, and it gets spit out as this thing that they know they saw, if that makes sense. Like, that happens with a lot of different things. Like, that's why sometimes I may not look at an eyewitness like sketch, because I don't want to copy per se. Like, I want to take, you know, inspiration, but I don't want to copy.
And also, you maybe don't want to be contaminated by creativity from somebody else.
Exactly. So maybe it's, you know, like I said, outside influences too. And because, you know, the 50s science fiction was like so there.
I agree. And can I ask a really weird question?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea that like time is not linear and things now can impact the past and shape the way things happened before, and that whole idea, right?
And birds don't exist.
Yeah.
So these aren't owls then.
These aren't owls. They don't exist.
can all of the interpretations that have been done in pop media or in pop culture and in media and such, like, refigure the way these things are experienced in the past? Like, if we could get in a time machine right now and go back and like stand outside these windows, would we just see little green guys running around? Or like, do you think there's any possibility of stuff like that?
We'd see owls in costumes.
I don't really believe in time travel per se. I believe that history is a myth, that history does not exist, that history is a myth that we use now, construct throughout the years to aid us in our future.
We're getting t-shirts. History and birds do not exist.
That's really interesting.
It's going to be a quote. Sorry.
That's really interesting. So like, let's just, you know, time travel aside, like, things happened yesterday. What are those things? They're just gone, Vuk? Like, it's just
Things happen yesterday and they at that time imprint into our minds or into our collective unconsciousness or pop culture or whatever. And then these imprints become entities for themselves that evolve alongside us and change and mold into whatever we need them to be.
Yeah, I like that.
I need more sleep for this.
All right, I'm going to get a little bit. I'm just going to go a little further, Christina. Hang in there for 1 second. Ooh. Do you know the idea? You know the idea that we don't store memories like locally in our, you know, in our brains, but like in other parts of our body and stuff like that. Do you think the same is happening like in the greater consciousness? Like, you know, different segments of the world are used to store different parts of the global consciousness memory and stuff like that?
I don't think it's memory per se, but rather we pick up on the status quo of the contemporary time. So it's like, let's say you're born and you need to learn how to wash your dirty laundry. You're not going to learn from scratch how to construct a washing machine. You know, you're just going to accept the washing machine from your outside world.
That makes a lot of sense. And oh man, that line. So I was watching again, Mystery Doug comes up about memory, and they're talking about, like, I think the question was, why can't babies remember anything? And you know, the first thing they say is, no one really knows anything, but here's some of the best guesses. And one of the things they said is because babies have so much stuff to remember to just not die all the time that they don't have room to remember like what they enjoy. They just have to remember, don't fall on my face, don't eat that thing, don't, like. And I was like, that's really interesting that there's like a capacity to it. And
okay, so as a former teacher, and I was teaching my students this way, I was always telling them, the smartest person is not the person who knows the most, like who has most stored facts in their minds. Even facts constantly change. Like I learned in college, Whitaker's Five Kingdom system, and now that does not exist anymore. We have domains of the Tree of Life. So, you know, I can throw all that in the trash. But rather, the smart person is the person who knows how to utilize sources of information. You store information outside of yourself, not inside of yourself. Yeah. And then you learn how to use.
We're just all mushrooms. I bet we're mushrooms. Like, what if we're mushrooms? What if mushrooms, like real mushrooms or something else, but we're the mushrooms and we're all connected, I love it, by like mycelium?
Okay, well, this is what... shedding a bit more spotlight on Chris. This is why I told you, Chris, like I asked you, do you think all three versions of the goblins are valid? Because now they are the reality within the consciousness of each of the three people who spawned those versions and influencing their lives.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just blanked. I honestly have no clue about, like, I just think whatever they saw, that's what they saw. I mean, there's nothing else to it. That every person is gonna, I mean, it all comes down to like even perspectives on things. I mean, one person is gonna see one thing as something completely different. Like if we if you and me, Vuk, let's say, or all four of us, if we experience a certain, I don't know, let's say we were all hanging out and we saw something just super weird, I'm more than sure that all four of us are gonna have completely, they might have similar details, but they're all gonna be completely different accounts of what we saw, because we're all gonna notice different things in that moment.
Okay, but that goes back to your artwork, because you are portraying three entities, and as you said, as you are doing 2D images, you now, by portraying three entities, have the opportunity to portray them from different perspectives, and that goes back to this idea that you're sharing of vantage points, you know? And I'm bringing all this up because it can aid you in doing your artwork.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, I was just gonna say, yeah, I mean, I remember after we recorded, just talking about like the whole perspective on even the way that I formulate my the style that I do it, childish, like when we first talked on our first conversation, I thought the reason why I was trying to create that sort of style was to make it a little bit more appealing for like children, since I have a kid. I mean, she's still pretty young, but I thought I was maybe doing it in that sort of style to not necessarily influence her, but almost have like this thing that I could have a connection with and show her, to not like completely just terrify her of all the weird shit that I listen to and I look into. But the more I thought about it, I think a lot of this weird high strangeness stuff is, I mean, in itself, I know like Christina says that she doesn't necessarily consider it, like most of these things aren't necessarily scary, that it's just the way that you interpret it. And maybe that's how I'm more of that fear-based interpretation. So trying to turn it into something more whimsical and goofy makes it more approachable and not keep me up at night about it. Like it doesn't make me, I like thinking about it, but I'm not going to like just go sleepless nights because I'm like terrified that I'm gonna see a Hopkinsville goblin pop up in my bedroom at night.
And also for the end, like tying back to what you were saying, you're cutifying these creatures and reducing them to something that would be appealing to your daughter. By doing the Kentucky goblins, which come in your version of them threes, you can do three different iterations of them and now provide your daughter a choice of choosing which design she prefers the most.
That's true. I mean, every time I show her a different design, she likes them. She loves looking back at them, and she'll ask me to like pull them up. So obviously it's something that is interesting her and not gonna just completely, you know, avert her from the subject.
Yeah.
I'd rather deal with Kentucky goblins over most people. I'm like gonna be real to you. Like, that's me. Like, a dog man, no problem. The neighbor, nah.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. I'm with you, I'd say 80% of the time.
People be peopling way too much for me.
No, that's true. One thing from what Chris just said that stuck out to me is it's definitely, I think the way he's approaching it, or Chris, the way you're approaching it, is very similar to how I've approached it. And I definitely have talked a lot about how my kid was a big influence in getting back into the weird stuff. And before I dove all the way back into the weird stuff, I got into a lot of the different like spirituality things, and one of the, or like the esoteric things, and whether it was things in the kind of chaos magic realm, or even just the seeker, like a spiritual realm, that always stuck with me, where the smartest people are the ones who are like, live in these things for a minute, you take what's useful for you, and you throw the rest of it over your shoulder, and then you move on. So using that with the paranormal would be very helpful for a lot of people, I feel like. Like, take the points that make your life better, and then just leave the rest behind. And sometimes, you know, I'm not saying the scary part of it might be what makes somebody's life better for some reason. I'm not here to yuck people's yum, but there's lots of good stuff in there that you can kind of highlight, like Chris was talking about, for introducing it to younger generations, or, you know, not starting it out in that dark zone.
Exactly. And the Kentucky Goblins provide us that opportunity, because all they do is do backflips when being shot at.
And exactly. Don't they chirp or chortle or something?
Ah, I can't remember that.
I think they said that they were chirping.
And you know what's funny about this episode? So usually people are debunking the Hopkinsville goblins as owls, but now we are debunking the owls in this episode because we said birds don't exist.
Birds don't exist. Time isn't real. We're mushrooms. We're just all big mushrooms.
Yes, yes. I've sent y'all that article from that Nobel-winning scientist, physicist dude who proved that reality, or the universe's reality, is not local or some shit, but essentially it proved that, like, if you're not looking at something, it doesn't exist. So,
okay.
You know, you gotta...
I think it's time to end this now, because we're all half dead, and you're opening a can of worms there.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
It's fun.
He has deemed it some shit, therefore it'll go into a whole other episode.
Okay, so for the end, can we start with Chris? Chris, can you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Chris_Galliano. That's pretty much where you can find just any of the artwork that I post for my Weird Wednesdays.
And we will be seeing your Kentucky Goblins probably before this episode airs.
Yeah, it should be probably, I'm shooting for this Wednesday, if not next Wednesday, but I'm pretty sure it'll be by this Wednesday coming up.
Okay, great, because this episode will air in like a month and a half or so. By then you'll bloom into a whole new person because of these experiences.
Yep, the more you talk to all of us, it's gonna change you. Welcome. Yeah.
I call it wallowing in the mud of the paranormal.
Yep. Welcome to the dark side. Your membership card's in the mail.
So, Christina, where can people find you and your project?
Yep. So I'm on Instagram as the Crescent Hair. The Crescent is in Moon, Hair is in Rabbit, all one word. I also have an online shop, the Crescent Hair, same thing as Instagram.com. Yeah. That's where I'm
at. And are you doing the Cryptid Fae calendar that's going to feature the Kentucky Goblins dancing in a fairy circle?
I'm trying. So yeah, this weekend I'm trying to knock it out. So I got one more critter, and then hopefully I get the layout done and I'll be able to launch it. And of course, I'll announce it on Instagram when that's ready. So yeah.
Okay. And Todd, where can people find you apart from my own show?
createmagicstudios.com, and Instagram is at ToddDE85, but yeah, createmagicstudios.com is get you everywhere. Thanks for having me again, Vuk.
No problem. And I wanted to ask, does your personal folklore monthly comic book feature the goblin?
Oh yeah, there's always goblins in there. So this one has at least 3 or 4 Goblin Life pages in it.
Oh, nice, man. And that is on Patreon as well.
Yeah, and on the website you can just buy single issues too, or you can subscribe monthly on Patreon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all for doing this was wild as always.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, fellow mushroom.
Yes
inviting us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem, guys, no problem. I as Christina says, I am the mushroom that is controlling your minds.
All this invisible mycelium everywhere
swaying your consciousness with with flashy imagery and words.
Yeah, we're dorks.
And you, the listener, I hope I have established my control over you and consume my content.
And remember, birds aren't real.